Welcome, friends, to this episode of the Superhero Ethics. You might have heard about a little bit of labor trouble happening in Hollywood these days. You might have heard about Scarlett Johansson and Disney getting into a little bit of a tiff. You might have heard that we might have a strike and it might affect some of the content that we love to see. And it raises a lot of interesting questions for us as fans of where do we stand on all this. I'm being joined today by a couple of great podcast hosts, all of whom have some contacts with the industry, and we're going to get some great conversation right after this break. Welcome back, folks. I'm Matthew, your host. Joining me today are two of the hosts, I guess really the founders of the Next Reel family of podcasts, on which my Marvel Movie Minute podcast has been going. I've been doing that in partnership with Andy Nelson, one of the people joining us. Both of them also have been working in and around Hollywood for a while, been connected to a lot of this stuff, and we're going to get into a great conversation about what's been going on. So let me introduce both of you. Andy Nelson, first, how are you doing today?
Why, hello there. Nice to be over here on this side of the podcasting land to chat with you over here.
For once, with many of my many coughs and breaks, Andy won't have to edit them. So this is probably easier on him. And Andy, what's kind of your connection to this issue? And tell folks a little bit about your background and where you're coming from.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I went to film school, worked in the film industry for 20 plus years, working as an editor and producer, writer, kind of the whole gamut, director. I worked on a lot of lower budget projects, so we weren't involved. And I live in and work in a right to work state, where there are unions here, but certainly it's for a lot of the projects that we were working on, it generally wasn't an issue. Still, there were still projects that I would work on with the unions. Usually, it was SAG because you were bringing in SAG actors to work on a project. Mm-hmm. But I had plenty of conversations with union members and just talking about union, just kind of all the deals of working with the union. And oftentimes part of my negotiation with people was to, make sure that we had fair deals that were comparable along the lines of what was something that they would get with the union, but wasn't necessarily like officially a union project. And so there was a lot of that sort of thing. So, it's a lot of that negotiating and trying to figure out what's fair, what's going to work with people.
Great. That makes sense. But Annie, thank you so much for being here and a part of it. And Pete, what about yourself?
Well, my background was all in broadcasting. And so my relationship with union workers, of course, IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and SAG-AFTRA for broadcast talent, National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians is another union representation that we would sometimes deal with. But I know that protection of those rights is so important, and so that was my background. Of course, I'm not part of a podcasting union at this point, and so so we don't have any direct connection to it right now. But I do have a background from the broadcasting industry, so excited to
talk
about
a history of union organizing. That was my first career, so sure. I can help get that started.
Okay,
I think as the people who run Next Reel, I might be picketing you.
Right,
we'll figure out that.
Wait a minute. You know what? Let's table that for maybe never.
All right. And also joining us is Mandy Fabian. Mandy, I'm so glad you could join as well. You and I have not worked together, but I've heard you on the Next Reel podcast as well. And I know that this is an issue that you also have a lot of connection to. So can you just tell our listeners a little bit about you and your background and your connection to the kind of what's happening in the Hollywood right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been a SAG-AFTRA member for many, many years, and about, I guess, 5 years ago, I became a member of the Writers Guild of America. But I also, a couple of performing unions. But then I also I've been producing for a few years. So I also have had a taste of what it's like to work with the unions from the other side.
Right.
Yeah. That's my, and then I am a director. And so I've been on sets with crews, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years, working with crews who I've seen endure these conditions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're here. And just for any of our fans who are of a particularly geeky nature, as most of the superhero ethics crowd can tend to be, I believe they might recognize your voice probably from a lot of places, but from the Resident Evil video game. Am I correct?
Van Helsing.
Van Helsing, sorry. I'm not one of the video game people, but
yeah. But I am evil. I mean, I am Resident Evil, like in and of myself. But I don't think I've made the game just yet.
Okay.
But my husband's the voice of Superman in something.
Oh,
yeah.
In something.
One of the Superman things.
When's the last time you've seen him? It's been a while, right?
I think I'm still married. I mean, I haven't. I check my mailbox daily, and there haven't been any papers. So,
yeah. You know, I have a pastoral background, but that's a whole other kind of union negotiations that we're not getting into today. But just rough answer. What was the voice you did in Van Helsing?
Oh my God, it's so embarrassing that I don't even remember what the name was. I swear to God, it was Kate Beckinsale. Kate Beckinsale's voice. Right.
Yeah, Kate Beckinsale's
it was her
wasn't
voice.
She so one whatever. Of she was one of the three like demon brides or something like that, wasn't she? That's been a long
think
time.
Think so. I just know I had to do the Transylvanian accent, and it was very
Anna, proving that I am a very good researcher, and I did all my research. Character's
Thank
name
you,
is
research
Anna.
Department. Yep, I was Anna. Totally, I remember the bond I felt with Anna. We were like this. That's me on top.
And I think Kate Beckinsale is in the Resident Evil movies or games, so I have some justification of the confusion.
That would be
yes.
Underworld.
Anyway,
yeah.
Look,
Underworld.
Give me another credit. Underworld. I'll take it.
There we go. All
I right, was also well, in Titanic. I played Kate Winslet. So you just keep giving me credits that I don't deserve. I love it.
That's important. That's important.
Now I love the idea of a Titanic video game.
Yeah. Right.
Quick, get the gem.
I like it. I like it. Well, if nothing, yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. We'll do that at the end. Let me kind of just start the conversation here, because I think one of the reasons why I most wanted to do this podcast is, you know, here we talk a lot about the ethical questions that are raised by the media we love in terms of, you know, Team Cap or Team Tony and stuff like that. But we also sometimes get into the ethics of fandom and what does it mean to be a fan and how do you make decisions about things? And I think these issues are very relevant to that. And so I wanted to start on a kind of general level. There's so much content out there already. And obviously we all have the things that we enjoy. But in terms of deciding what you're going to watch and what you're going to support, I'm curious just from each of you, like how, you know, when you hear about either union stuff or a particular producer, director, or actor being terrible, like, or saying things that a lot of people are against, how do you all make decisions in terms of that kind of stuff, if at all, in terms of what you watch with your family, what you want to support or not support, any of that?
Oh, wow.
That's always a tough question because, you know, I still like to eat at Chick-fil-A and I don't support them. I, you know, it's one of these difficult things. It's like, where's that line? It's hard for me to say, well, I'm not going to watch anything that the particular company puts out because I'm unhappy with the way that those particular people are treated. I mean, there are, I guess when it feels very egregious, I certainly, you know, have stopped shopping at certain places because of things that happen. But largely, I think it's one of those things where, I guess from my perspective, it's more me saying, I'm okay if things that I want to watch are delayed. You know, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with things having to kind of shut down for a little bit so people can figure out something that's fair for everybody that's involved. So, you know, if it means I have to wait another month or 6 months or a couple years, that's fine.
It's not like there's not a backlog of content that we haven't gotten to yet, you know, so I can understand that. What about from anyone else?
It's tricky because I know that there's a lot of like Apple, for example, is a company that has made a lot of ethically questionable decisions. And yet I am Zooming from my iPhone. So I think you always make certain compromises along the way. I loved Woody Allen movies but I no longer try, I would not pay for a Woody Allen movie right now. Like I think it has to inform your life, you know, in some way you have to stay true to your ethical center, but also when it comes to the conversation about IATSE and crew, specifically crew, because it is a middle class industry. I think it's a little, and it is for actors as well and writers. It's not, everybody doesn't make the big bucks that you think. Like, you only see the big celebrities and all the billions of dollars and stuff, but you don't, for in terms of a middle class living wage, and as hard as these people work, and as hard as they work just because there's been a culture, I'm just saying I think that for me, people being treated ethically and humanely is always going to trump, because there's so much content. The fact is, I think we have to sort of start a movement where you go like, look, there's plenty of stuff for me to watch that has been done within a, you know.
Right.
Although in entertainment, there's a certain culture. I don't know that there is that much that's really giving people a living wage right now. It's interesting.
Well, living wage and also just a living. I mean, the hours they work, it really doesn't allow, like when you're working on a film, I mean, you're working 12 to 14 to longer hour days. It's not like you can go to work and then you can go out with your friends after work. Like it's a living wage, but it's also allowing people to actually just live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate, and we're definitely getting into this stuff specifically about the union, but I really appreciate the points you're bringing up, both about the kind of the specifics and just the general, because like what you were saying, Mandy, about remembering that this is mostly like middle class, working class people we're talking about here. You know, another part of this discussion is the recent lawsuit between Scarlett Johansson and Disney. And frankly, making sure that Scarlett Johansson gets $25 million instead of $20 million is not what gets me singing Power in the Union.
I agree.
But knowing that her decision is going to affect everybody else, like that's when it becomes important.
And in fact, that's momentum in large part for exactly what we've seen happen with that adds fuel to the fire to the IATSE, situation now. We need those kinds of stories to help propel the discussion.
Yeah. I mean, like when I work in the labor union, as union organizers, particularly with AFSCME, the Union of Federal, State, and Municipal Workers, I was there during one of the baseball strikes, and we were all kind of joking, like, yeah, making sure that Carlos Beltran gets $8 million instead of six is not what fires us up, but it is, we're seeing the power of unions. We're seeing the power of a union to bring something to a halt. And also just to kind of talk on like the more general side of it, I appreciate what you guys both brought up about things like Chick-fil-A and Woody Allen. I grew up in New York City as the child of a Jewish father and a Jewish family. Woody Allen is a lot of my childhood. Mm-hmm. The movie Radio Days is quite literally my father's childhood. He grew up five blocks from there. And Sleeper is still probably the funniest movie I've ever seen. I don't want to ever give money to Woody Allen again, but I can't shame, that doesn't make those movies stop being powerful memories for me.
Yeah.
I have a Harry Potter tattoo because that was a huge part of my childhood and my young adulthood. I don't ever want to give more money to J.K. Rowling. With something like Chick-fil-A, I think you and I would probably disagree with that. That's when I've stopped supporting it all. But I think we all have to make those kind of, to me, that's kind of part of why this discussion is important, because, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. We all know that. You know, how many of us had to use Amazon a lot more than we would like to because of the pandemic, certainly for myself as a disabled person. And I think that's why, I don't think we're going to come out of here telling fans, watch this, don't watch that, but just talk about the way we're wrestling with these questions. I think we all have to figure that out between what's the issue we care most about and what's our practical realities and how does it all fit together.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to add, this gets to something that I wrestle with a lot, which is how good it feels to say, watch any Kevin Spacey movies, right? Well, that's not really reasonable. And what I've sort of come to is that, even though I find his behavior distasteful, me boycotting Kevin Spacey movies is actually sort of implicitly harmful to the hundreds of other people that also worked on that. On those films, right? The same thing with Woody Allen. I find his behavior distasteful, but hundreds, thousands of people have worked collectively on the films of Woody Allen. And at what point does, future boycotts actually, because of one personality and one set of behaviors, actually, influence the livelihoods of many others?
Well, and I saw that from the other people involved in Harry Potter, all the actors who came out saying, a lot of us don't feel that way.
Exactly. Harry Potter's a great example.
And same thing, I remember when Ender's Game, the film, came out, and the actors all had to kind of talk about all those people who also worked on this who weren't the author who had a lot of things to say that a lot of people disagreed with at that particular point in time. So, I mean, it's an issue, and it's perpetually going to be a challenge in that sort of cancel culture, especially when people stop essentially cancel culture. I mean, I don't have an issue with saying, you know, I have issues with that person. I'm going to stop seeing their films or things like that. But also, I feel like they're, you know, at some point, we also need to kind of remember there's this whole idea of forgiveness. And is there a point when somebody can actually, you know, apologize and be forgiven?
Yeah. I mean, that I think that's the thing. There's just not, there's no one is perfect. And so in some cases, someone's flaws coming out in the open inspires a discussion that is needed, right? Like Woody Allen is not the only pedophile or predator that's been in the industry, but the fact that there's an openness about it and people are now talking about it and raising awareness as to how, you know, really looking back and going, oh wow, yeah, we were all led to believe that Mia Farrow was just crazy, and how does that parallel things that are happening today? The discussion of it is actually a weird gift to us as a society. So you're right, like, do I want Woody Allen to go on to win awards and never ever have consequences for his actions? No. But does me not watching Manhattan, which, by the way, it's right there in that movie that he likes young girls. Yeah. I mean, it's right there.
Right.
But, you know, does that really do anything? Because to your point, there's a lot of other people that were part of his work.
Yeah. And I think that those are the discussions that are necessary. You know, one of the other podcasts I run is Star Wars. And so we were doing episode by episode reviews of The Mandalorian when it was coming out. And we're going to do again with the next season. And when all the stuff came out about Cara Dune, about being her transphobic comments and the anti-vax comments, you know, it was a hard discussion. And I certainly was, you know, I was happy to sign on to petitions to Disney saying, please don't cast her again. This is not someone who I want to be supporting. But, you know, a couple of people wrote in and said, well, you should stop, you should stop recording content about this show. And, well, she wasn't even one of the stars, you know,
right,
she was a co-star. But even if she had been, like, the show's already been made. And I think that there's so much complexity there. And especially, I like the point about the, like, I tend to be a lot more on the side of not really seeing cancel culture as a problem. But I do think that that idea of the first offense versus the, like, conversation, you know, the conversation instead of just canceling someone. And I know I was very part of the J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter world when all that stuff was coming out. And I remember the first year or so, there was a lot of conversation about, like, look, think about all the things that we learned from her books about openness and understanding and things like that. I'm sure as she understands this issue, she'll change, you know? And it was only once she continued to double down and double down that then there was the, like, you know, forget it. But even in that community, like, I've seen such a great, like, we're not going to let go of the books. We're not going to let go of the love of the movies. We might not see the new stuff, but, you know, and if you do see the new stuff, well, that's also an understandable choice.
And it's also understandable because they're just not as good. Just saying.
Yeah, well, that's also true.
Shots fired.
True, quality is king.
But you know what?
We're Americans. We don't want wizards in our own country. We want them all to be British and have stuffy accents and wear uniforms.
Where you belong, wizards.
Yeah.
Look, I think this gets to this makes for a nice transition to the IATSE discussion, though, because you hear talk about how to best support. If you are a supporter of labor, how do you best support labor in their times of struggle? And does that equate to choosing content in our current state that doesn't support those represented by, you know, the big media machine, right? And we're going to stop watching Disney and Marvel movies right now because this is going on. And I'm hearing more and more of those kinds of just completely hyperbolic statements that I think don't really get at the heart of what labor negotiations are all about.
Well,
if I can just ask, because I think a lot of our listeners probably have seen the headlines but don't know the main story. I'm guessing a lot of folks don't even know the kind of terms we're throwing around. Can one of you give just kind of a quick summary of what's the actual thing that's happening? And then we'll talk about what it all means.
Well, I want to point out one thing, though, about fans.
Oh, go for it.
In entertainment. Is the power that they actually do hold that is really not to be understated. In the same way that a voter holds power in the political arena, where you may think you don't have much power, and then one vote, your vote, can change everything. And participation is everything. And fans drive the entertainment business. Yep. You see stuff getting repeated and reproduced and done over and over, not because everybody's like, oh my God, this is my most favorite thing in the world, but because the fan base is there and loud and active. So it's a huge voice in this. And that is something that fans should know, is that if they were to speak out or just be, you know, they don't have to try to control things, but to lend their voice to it is a huge thing. So it's good that we are discussing what's going on with IATSE.
And I think that's such a good point, especially because that's something, and this is a different part of the ethics of fandom, but that can be used in both very positive and kind of negative ways. You know, I think the outcry about Cara Dune was probably a big part of why that I'm saying that's the name of the character, not the actress. Gina Carano is the actress. Right. But also, I mean, the outcry of a lot of awful comments probably had some effects on the sequel movies, especially in terms of the role of Rose Tyler being like, Rose Tico being completely, you know, pushed down and things like that. I think that's a very good point that fans have to remember their power and also think about, like, you know, how do we use it? Supporting labor may be the thing we do. Driving people out because we only want white men as superheroes? Maybe not so much. But, you know, or the bullying campaigns we've, you know, I have my own issues with a lot of creators. Sometimes I see the fandom getting into this very toxic bullying culture. That's, I think, very different. But that's another episode. Now let's get back to the union stuff.
Yeah, it is a tricky line to walk, because like when a union is upset, does that mean as fans we should stop going to see things to support, to show our support? Or does it mean we should keep going to see these things to show that we support the work they're doing? And so it's tricky. In this particular case, IATSE is really struggling with the fact that the studios keep pushing for longer.
So, is IATSE? What does that stand for?
It's the IATSE is the I had it here and now the IATSE is the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees.
Gotcha. So
they represent the bulk of all the people in Hollywood that are working from costume designers to grip and electric to makeup and. Yeah.
Cinematographers, script supervisors, unit production managers, I mean, everyone.
Yeah. If you ever wondered why the credits go on for 7 minutes after you've seen the actors, these are the main people we're talking about, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. The people who actually make, besides everybody who's not a director, writer, producer, or actor, it's everybody else.
It's largely like the below the line. You'll hear discussion the above the line, below the line. These are the people who don't necessarily have those really fancy contracts with all the production points and all that stuff that they get on the back end. This is all the people who are below the line who are just, you know, working the number of hours. And that's really the issue, is the number of hours.
Right.
Generally, productions push for longer hours, like, you know, 12-hour days. You know, sometimes it's pushing for some of the crew to 14 and plus hour days. They want to make sure that they have turnaround, which they want at least a 10-hour turnaround, which means from the time you leave the set to the time you're back, you need at least a 10-hour break. And just to make sure you're getting enough sleep and that you actually have time to kind of close down for a bit. They also want to stop these long weeks, like these productions. In addition to like longer days, they're also pushing for longer shoot weeks. Like instead of just a 5-day shoot, they're pushing for 6, 7, 8, sometimes even up to 9-day shooting schedule, which is kind of a standard that a lot of these hour-long TV shows are pushing for. And that's, 9 work days straight working 12 plus hours. I mean, that's really long and exhausting. And so they're pushing for, you know, turnaround every night. And then on weekends, I think 54-hour turnaround from the time they leave Friday to the time they come back Monday.
Which I think is really important that you bring all of that detail up, Andy, because I think a lot of the press is covering this like, a lot of the sort of pro industry press is covering this as that these workers want longer meal breaks and bathroom breaks. And it's really much more complex than that. Like it is much more health and safety related, and not to mention living wages for the time that they are on the job.
Yeah, because some of the lower paid people, they don't get that much. And then when they're working these hours, it's ridiculous how much they're expected to do. And they just aren't getting paid something that compensates for them for the huge amount of their life that they're putting into these projects.
And so I understand that part of what's going on is not just like how it's in the how it's handled in the whole industry, but that the streaming services are starting to create a lot of their own content, like Netflix and Apple Plus and Amazon, that they're kind of not quite fitting into what was happening before, and so it's causing a lot of problems. Can you talk more about that aspect of it?
Well, that's been true for every single union, for SAG-AFTRA and for WGA. And actually, I'm not sure about DGA, but I can only assume it's the same, which is that they, when they were coming out as producing their own content, not just distributing DVDs and existing things, they had a deal with the unions that was like, hey, we're just Netflix. Like, we don't know if anybody's going to watch this. We don't know if it's going to make any money. Like, you can't hold us to the same standards as ABC, CBS, NBC, because we're just basically online content, right? At the time, 15 years ago, that was a new thing. And so people were like, gosh, will anybody watch something on their computer or phone? And that's when they started the groundwork. And now, of course, everyone watches everything on their computer, phone. Streaming is equally as prevalent as network television, if not more so. But their standards of pay and what they are beholden to in terms of pension and health is much, much lower. So they basically, they get to pay Shonda Rhimes and I can't think of one other person that has an overall deal, but like they
probably
pay...
like Mike Flanagan,
yeah,
who does all the horror projects with Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, and I can see why that's so upsetting, because I have to say, at one point I was seriously thinking about trying to open a board game store, and I went to some business classes and I did a lot of research, and there was so much discussion about the risk of starting something new. I don't remember anyone saying, "Oh, since it's so risky, you can ignore the minimum wage, you can ignore worker safety," like. I was trying to start a new business, but I had to follow all the rules. And so, it's ridiculous, it would seem, that these creators can say, oh, but like, we're not established, so we don't have to play by the union rules.
Yeah, it was part of their negotiation tactic, which is very forceful. I mean, to be honest, when they said that IATSE was going to strike and they haven't struck in, oh my God, is it since like the
30s? It's like 107, or yeah, it's like 70 right. some odd years.
Yeah.
Very long time, yeah.
I was like,
it was Bloody Friday, right? That was the Bloody Friday story. Right?
I could not believe that there has not been a strike since then, because I can't believe that the AMPTP has been so successful with their negotiating tactics that they've bent this whole time to what they have.
I mean, listen, I saw The Godfather, where they always talked about like using Hollywood unions as power to get, you know, The Godfather's son more movie deals. So who knows? But joking. There's not connections there. But yeah, I mean, the last Hollywood strike that at least as an outsider that I know, the only Hollywood strike that I can remember, at least in my lifetime, was the screenwriter's strike from like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
There have been, there was that one in around, well, it was around what, 08? Is that when it was?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Whenever Dr. Hollywood.
The WGA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Before that, there was a commercial strike, SAG-AFTRA, I think in 2000 or something. But yeah.
Well, there was. And you know, I mean, this was when reality TV came around. It was in the late 90s, right? That's when Survivor came out, because we had no writers anymore. So we have, you know, Real World and Survivor and all these. That was the last big kind of run-up of what do we do when no one can write on a set.
I think the reason it's happening now is because, you know, for the longest time, there were limited opportunities in entertainment, right? Because there were just fewer outlets. And now there's more, people are making content at a breakneck speed, and they're trying to do it because they're making so much of it for as little money as possible where they can. They can't not pay Shonda Rhimes, or they can't not pay Scarlett Johansson. So they're trying to pay, you know, Minnie, who works in makeup, as little as possible. And since we're paying her a day rate anyway, let's get her to work 14 hours instead of 12 or 10. So it's just like any corporation, it's operating in the same way that an Amazon operates, where you go like, where can I cut back and make as much money as possible for my shareholders?
Right. Yeah, I think this probably makes a lot of sense, both about the expanding content and the more power, but also this is just kind of like a time when worker rights are really something being discussed a lot.
Yes.
You know, we just had a Nabisco strike that I remember because I love a lot of their products and couldn't have them for a couple of weeks. And they basically won that strike. Kellogg workers are now on strike. And so that's affecting a lot of things. We're having to see this kind of general unofficial strike of minimum wage workers of just not taking the jobs anymore at restaurants and things like that. So, yeah, it seems like an interesting time.
Well, I feel like a lot of this has been spurred on because of the pandemic, where it has pushed a lot of people into these places where suddenly these groups are now saying, hey, we really need you to do this extra stuff because of all this other stuff that's been going on in the world. And we can't pay you as much because, you know, for because of all that, because we haven't been selling as much. And I think it's really kind of putting a lot of on the workers' shoulders. And people are, frankly, I think a lot of people are just kind of fed up with it right now.
Yeah. Well, right, sure, because how long does that grace last? Like, when you're trying to bring an industry out of complete shutdown, you might have a little bit more oomph because you want to work, right? Say I'm an electrician on set. Yeah, I'll come back to work. I'll wear a mask. I'll do tests every day. And eventually you realize after, you know, 18, 14-hour days, and you realize you should be getting hazard pay at this point, that your patience has run out. And that's what transitions are all about, is figuring out how do we renegotiate to the point where we can all make sense of this. And I go back to Scarlett Johansson. Like, part of the reason we need a big lawsuit like that is for the studios to actually stop and say, hey, we get it now. Maybe business as usual no longer accounts for current conditions. If no one ever pushes that button, they will continue writing contracts the way they've always written contracts. We need somebody to come in and say, you have to write contracts now that take into account the fact that you're going to release this movie day and date on streaming services. You have to do that. And not just for Scarlett Johansson, but for everybody. And that's been largely the fallout from Disney, is now they're rewriting and rethinking the way contracts are written. And Mandy, I don't know, stop me when I start lying, because when's the last time I started writing a contract for an A-list star? But isn't that what we need to see, and why this button needs to be pushed for IATSE, right? This is where they get to come back and say, wait, I know conditions are weird and hard for everybody. We get it. Of all people, we're working it. But in fact, you need to take that into account starting now, starting today.
Yes, I think that's true. I also think that it's a cold-hearted business thing where Scarlett Johansson has leverage and her people can go back and make this public and nasty, and they need Scarlett Johansson to do the other movies and they need her as an asset. So it's in their best interest to settle, whereas they feel like crew is replaceable. And like, you have to remember this, like after we did an independent movie in April and people were eager to work, but we paid them a good day rate that was appropriate for our budget, and we never worked more than 12 hours. That would never happen on our set. Like, and we fed them well, and like, you know, and everybody, their dignity was intact. So they actually worked for less money because they love the project and it's an artistic realm. Well, yeah, but what we're discussing is Apple TV not paying for people to eat, like expecting them to pack their own lunch and come on set and not, like, they do insane things to cut corners, and they're Apple. So that's the difference. Yeah. Like, it's one thing if you have a low budget and you're paying people what you're paying and they want to do it, we're all good. We're talking about corporations that are making so much money and they're asking you to pack your own lunch. It's preposterous.
It's become like a whole connection to like this 1% idea. You see these corporate heads with such ridiculous quantities of money, like Amazon and Apple and Disney, and you hear how much money they're just taking in.
Yep.
And all the people at the bottom are like, really? Because I'm not feeling any of that with any of the work I'm doing for you. And it's not like it needs to be like everybody gets paid the same thing, but it still needs to be fair.
Well, and that's the problem with Apple, is they are, I feel like their approach to this is disingenuous next to the market, because they are trying to negotiate at a lower rate, and they're selling that argument by saying we have fewer subscribers on our service than anybody else. But they're making like Hollywood caliber shows in Foundation and The Morning Show, and their content,
literally Oscar winning shows now.
Emmy winning shows. It doesn't matter how many subscribers you have, Apple. It matters that the work was done. Yeah. Pay the rate. And that, I think, is the issue.
And I really appreciate the way you set the context there, because I think for someone like myself or other people who don't really know these details, when I hear Scarlett Johansson is going to make even more money, my first thought is, oh, but does that mean that Mimi in the makeup department is going to make less? And so kind of seeing that actually, no, it's not Hollywood may try to put one against the other. I'm sure there's going to be stuff coming out about like, well, we would pay you more, but greedy Scarlett is trying to take away. Hearing that from that perspective, they don't see it that way, that it is all one big together fight, I think really helps to understand how all this is coming together. So let me kind of shift a bit to, what does this mean? If the union does go on strike, what is that going to mean for content being produced? Because one of the things that I think I'm already starting to see is the scare tactics. Like I sent all of you an article that was in one of the kind of clickbait entertainment websites that was, Star Wars fans freak out, we might not get the Mandalorian show for another year if the union goes on strike. And it was very clearly like some studio executive helped get that piece written, I'm sure. What will it actually mean if the union goes on strike?
Imagine that the strike will last very long, because I think this is just a, you know, the positioning on this is from their angle, they're like, you know, if we don't green light and make these shows, like, we're the ones taking all the financial risk. We put up all the money. We, you know, are the ones releasing the show. And if nobody watches it, we lose our shirt. And so they don't. That's why they're like, we have to pay you as little as possible, because otherwise we'll lose our shirt. Whereas the other people are like, right. Yes. And if we don't show up to work, you don't make your shows because they can't. You can't do it without a crew. Right. So I don't think the strike will last long, because ultimately, in order to make any money, they have to make content, and especially something like Star Wars would give the union leverage, because if you can't make Star Wars, then that's really a big winner for them, and they need it.
Right.
So that's
a funny one too, especially because the Star Wars fandom does not love Disney to begin with.
Yeah.
So getting the Star Wars fans to be mad at Disney is not going to be hard for union press. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't imagine the strike will last very long because of that. And because ultimately it's not sexy. And for someone who wants to see their next season of anything, you know, it's frustrating. But like, ultimately, they're not asking outrageous things. This isn't Scarlett Johansson's people asking for another several million. This is people looking for even more than pay, safe working conditions. They're looking for an environment where they don't have to skip a meal in order to pay their electricity bill, and where they can get rest and they can have things like, I don't know, friends and see their kids. And ultimately, and I've been on these sets, right? Like, I've never gone over 12 hours in my life. Yes, 12 hours is pretty standard in our industry. That's how it works. But that's actually a short work day for everybody, or like I should say standard. That's coming in, setting up, and then wrapping out at 12. So, and for my money, and I'm not a diva, or, you know, I'm not a huge, tyrant, but I don't see why anybody, part of my job description is making a 12-hour day. So when I hear about people going over 14 and 16, what's happening is then you have people who've decided they need that, and they're just going to take it. And they're not getting, even if they get overtime pay, it's still like, it's not safe. It's not good for their health and well-being. Overall, I think it's like we've created this scenario where, like, you know, whatever the visionary wants, whatever the network wants, like, we're making art here. You've got to sacrifice for your art. And it's like, it's gone too far.
Right.
We're not paying enough for that.
No. And I mean, I think IATSE, they were pretty clear with their vote, right? I mean, like,
oh yeah.
More than 96% of voters turned out to vote almost unanimously that they wanted to that they agreed we'll strike if we have to. I mean, that's a huge number of people turning out in agreement saying we want this to stop. So yeah, I think that the position is going to be a pretty hard and fast position from their end. So yeah, the decision from the AMPTP is going to have to, I mean, they've already agreed to 10-hour turnaround on all productions. Right. So, I mean, they're already working on these agreements. And so hopefully we'll be able to get these agreements to happen and things will be safe and we won't have to have a strike. I mean, that's obviously always the goal.
Well, and I think as an aside to all of that, we're talking about film and television production crews, but the pressure on this agreement is coming from a lot of places that maybe even if you're not a TV and film fan, you will notice, because IATSE represents 150,000 people in the entertainment field. The Kennedy Center agreed those employees are going to be joining their IATSE represented. Disney is represented, and I think Disney World said that they would not be going, but Disneyland is still is still up for debate as we record this. So, but we're talking trade shows, exhibition space. As the world comes out of the pandemic and starts to do more in-person events, this could really impact the way events are held for a short time while these negotiations are underway, if a strike is happens.
I have friends who are in the music business, you know, like the touring guitarist for different tours and stuff, and you know, the people who hang lights on a Hollywood set and the people who hang lights at a concert hall are, it's the same skill set. Yeah,
right.
Even they're talking about how this might affect them. So
Well,
and I think that's good to know, because I think, as I said, that article I'm sure is not going to be the only one. I think for a lot of fans, the first thought is, does this mean, you know, after a year of losing content because of the pandemic, we're going to go back to months and months of not losing content? It sounds like the general consensus is that that's very unlikely to happen here.
Well, did anybody really lose content over the pandemic? I mean,
I mean, also true.
I feel like there's a fire hose of content. If anything, I was like, oh, thank God I can catch up a little bit. I mean, I think it would be a great opportunity for fans to exercise their voice and see how much muscle they have in terms of, you know, calling out for the right, like supporting IATSE in this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, if you really, truly love the show, it's a little bit like, you know, maybe sometimes you need to know how the sausage is made, right?
Yeah.
Like it's
if you love that restaurant, tip the waitresses and support them if they go on strike.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that would be, you know, why not get creative with social media campaigns and things and reading other people's Instagram posts and tweets about it. I don't know. Like there must be some other way to get a fix of your world by supporting your world.
Yeah. I mean, when the WGA strike happened, in it was 14 weeks in 2007-08. I mean, a lot of what happened was a lot of productions that were close to like getting going, like scrambled to get production started as quickly as they could so that they could be in production and not have to worry before the strike happened. And for those that were still trying to get sorted out, they had to wait it out, get through those 14 weeks. But then you had things like, you know, Quantum of Solace, where Daniel Craig and the director were actually doing the rewrites on the script, which is probably why a lot of people don't like that movie that much. But that is why, you know, I mean, they were coming in to work on the script because of the strike. And so, I mean, you know, things like that will happen now if the strike happens, although I don't know how productions really could keep going. It'd be very difficult to if all these different departments.
Well, Daniel Craig is very capable, but I'm not sure if I want him on, you know, a cherry picker hanging lights. I'm just not.
But
convinced
but
that
could
that's
he do it?
but I will say also, I mean, you know, I'm not a Joss Whedon fan, given what he's done. But like Joss Whedon talking to some of his friends on the picket line during that strike is how we get Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blah, which is beloved. And I mean, I never want to kind of belittle any of this. And I'm very glad the writers struck for when they needed to. But some of my favorite TV seasons are all those seasons that had to have a part one and a part two, because now you didn't have plot lines stretching out over 25 episodes, but they made it a lot, you know, more condensed. So, well, and let's get into kind of Mandy. I think you keep raising this great point about what fans can do. What are the I want to actually start the conversation with, what is the union actually asking for? You know, because I think that when I was a union organizer, we were always kind of trying to be careful, like don't go off and do things that we're not recommending. You know, we had one worker where they were telling their kids to harass the kids of the boss at the school that they all went to. It's like, that's horrible. Don't do that. And like, you know, even like on the political side, as political organizers, you know, people in Georgia are being the ones saying like, hey, don't boycott our state. Please don't do that. You know, even though these terrible laws are being passed. What is the union actually putting out anything of like, hey, fans, here's how you can support us, that we do want you to boycott shows or we don't want you to boycott shows or anything like that?
Well, IATSE has a website that has a lot of information on it. And then there's also I've just been checking out like on Twitter. There's a lot of there's IATSE stories. I forget what the hashtag is, and I apologize for that. But there's I'll have to look that up.
It's IA Solidarity.
Yes.
Hashtag IA Solidarity and hashtag IA Reasonable Rest.
Great. Great. Yeah.
And we'll have both of those in the show notes for this for this podcast. I'm sorry, Mandy, I cut you off though.
Oh, no. And there's been like, there's a petition going. I tweeted a petition that got retweeted by people. Like, there's a petition you can sign. I think it would be very interesting if just fans signed those petitions and it wasn't just people in the industry, because it would show that this is bigger than just a few disgruntled, you know, it's not just the people in the union. It's that there's widespread support. So signing a petition is great. I think those social media support and having this be a topic of conversation and that's active among not just industry people, like as that's how Scarlett Johansson won the Disney fight, right? Like they just kept bringing it to the press and bringing it to the press and changing the optics on what Disney was doing.
I mean, the Zack Snyder Justice League cut, which many of us may think should not have been released, but it was released 1,000% because of fan pressure.
Yeah.
You know, that was a major studio decision because of fans. So
yeah.
I think it's important here that the union, at least as I understand so far, is not asking, they're not saying, hey, if we go on strike, stop watching all this stuff, cancel all your subscriptions. Is that correct? Or is that something that you think we might see if the strike happens?
I haven't
heard.
Because
as you said, there's a lot of back and forth about the support. Sorry.
Yeah. I haven't heard them say anything to that extent. Like, you know, let's stop watching all of these different networks. I haven't heard any of that. And I don't know. I struggle with that. You know, if that would end up being effective or not.
Right.
So I don't know. That would be a curious way to go if everybody just stopped watching. I kind of feel like I agree with Megan or with Mandy that the best thing that we could do is just, you know, show our solidarity, sign anything you can that comes your way that is a form of support to show that you also put your voice to this.
Yeah. I mean, if there was like an organized massive boycott of like everybody canceling their Netflix and Hulu subscriptions or something like that, that might be successful, but just not watching things while you know, I mean, it's interesting, like, I guess there will be a large explosion of reality television programming and stuff if this happens, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's what happened with the writer's strike.
How do you even do that, Mandy? I think that's where it's different than the writer's strike, because when the writers went on strike, reality television could come up. You know why? Because IATSE was there to actually make productions.
Well,
when these people can't, like when you can't run cameras, how do you make shows?
Well,
I think
they're largely non-union crews, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what it, well, yeah, I mean, all the stuff that I used to do, I mean, it was non-union. I work in a right-to-work state. And so, yeah, the people here, I mean, they may want, you might hear a lot about like, you know, I'm not going to work more than this number of hours a day, those sorts of things. Right. But, I mean, yeah, any sort of non-union project can absolutely still be going on. I don't know, like, where is the line as far as that falling, as far as, like, people, you know, the striking workers coming out to the sets, calling people scabs. Like, I don't know to what extent any of that would actually happen. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, there's always that possibility. But, I mean, things theoretically still could get made.
You look at the IATSE website for this resource. Again, Matthew, you'll put that in the show notes. But there are what we're talking about are the biggest of the big, right, studios that are being pressured here. And so and it's certainly more than Apple and Netflix. I mean, Columbia and MGM and Lionsgate and Focus and Universal, and like they're all under this pressure. So, yeah,
well,
pressure where it counts.
And just kind of like as I started thinking about that, it's like what could happen is production companies could start saying, well, we're going to go out of the States and we're going to go film overseas. I mean, I know a lot of the lower budget projects that I had been working on, they kind of stopped even coming to the U.S. because even our low wages that we were paying here was too much. And they would go to like South Africa or to the Ukraine, different places where they could pay people even less money and not have to worry about it. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that it means that a lot of productions move out of the country.
Well, that's what they did with The Crows Have Eyes 3, The Crowning, right? Moira.
Yep.
Moira shit went to where
to
did
go
she go?
Bosnia, I think.
Yeah, Bosnia.
Uh-huh. Well, like I love
no Schitt's Creek fans here. Okay, come on.
Oh no, I
me
love
and,
it.
Me and Matthew.
I love the TV show Spartacus, and I'm not quite sure why now all Romans have New Zealand accents, but you know, according to that show, all Romans. But it gave us some great actors, so you know I love the show. But yeah, but yeah, and that's
but
you know,
you know, Romans didn't have New Zealand accents.
That's true. We don't have any question. Recordings of them. That's true.
We don't.
Oh, your move, so, Romans.
Well, and that's exactly why I asked it, because I think, like I said, for me, when there's a worker justice issue happening or any kind of justice issue, I always want to take my leadership from the people who are leading that campaign. You know, I stopped buying Kellogg cereal because the Kellogg union leaders are saying they're calling for a boycott, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really helpful thing, is that I when I talk to fans, a lot of them say, wait, does this mean I have to stop watching? You know, I think it's important to know, like, if the union gets to a point where they think it's helpful, then we can have that discussion, but we're not there yet. And that there are so many, like, you know, I think the question of like, what would a digital picket line look like is an interesting question, but there's so many other things we can do, and that fan support, tweet campaigns, Twitter campaigns, petitions, they matter. They really do. They gave us the Justice League by Zack Snyder. Let's get them to do something else.
Well, and it's interesting too that
apologies if any of you worked on that.
You well, know, no, but I will say I liked it. So there.
Oh, here we go. This just went dark. No, you know, amazing how interesting, what an interesting economy we are in right now with no contracts. Like the ease of that I have to go to my Disney Plus subscription and just turn it off without any, you know, issues or repercussions. No, I don't have to pay out a year. I can do that to all of my subscription services very easily if and when that is called for. And I am somebody that does stand for, you know, health and safety issues. So I would do that if called for. I'm not going to do it yet. I think that's a sane approach.
And I think that's also an area where there's a lot of fan support to be generated, because I mean, I joke about Star Wars having a lot of issues with Disney specifically, but every day I see people complaining about the price of Netflix going up, and that there's some things on Hulu you have to watch with ads no matter how much you pay, and, you know, all the different things people are doing to – like, if I buy a DVD, I can watch it and then hand it to my friend, but I can't, you know, share my Disney password with someone. I mean, people do it all the time. We all know that, but, you
is
know,
your Disney password? Because that's awesome.
You just gave it away. That's amazing.
It's password exclamation point.
Oh, right. Yeah, you have to. Have, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Gotta
have
it.
Take it seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, that's, you know, and I know that all the torrent sites are incredibly popular with things like that. And I, again, don't want to support any of those. I want to make sure that people get the money that they need to. But I think there's going to be my hope is that a lot of these studios are going to see that they have not generated public support to begin with. And that's why the getting the fans on board is so helpful.
Yep.
I want to keep going on. We'll kind of do a general wrap up, but I want to switch a little bit to the Scarlett Johansson side of things, because I want to make sure we all kind of understand what happened there. The issue there, as I understand it, is that a lot of people make contracts where you're getting points, which means part of what you're getting is a percentage of the box office revenue.
Yep.
Yeah.
The pandemic obviously caused all box offices to close for a long time. And there's still a lot of folks who, myself included, aren't comfortable going to box office or aren't comfortable going to theaters because pandemic is still continuing in lots of places, especially overseas. So a lot of these theaters started saying, companies started saying, okay, so we'll release the movie online.
Mm-hmm.
But what that meant was, if I decided to pay $19 to watch Black Widow on Disney Plus instead of going to see it in the theater, that $19 I paid, or even just my Disney subscription, was not included in the money that Scarlett Johansson and everyone else down the line would get a percentage of.
Right.
So, and that's what they were suing about, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because...
And this...
Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say, and people remember, I believe, Patty Jenkins made similar complaints when Wonder Woman was released. Wonder Woman 84 was released online, so it's not the first time.
No, and it's... And I think, you know, part of the thing is, like, you know, you pay $20 to watch it at home, and you can watch it as often as you want, also with as many people that you can fill in your living room as you want. Like, it's right. Just I've paid this money for the premiere access, and now I have it until it's actually released officially, and then no one has to pay for it on Disney Plus anymore. Whereas if I go to the movie theater, I've got to pay for my ticket, my wife's ticket, my kids' tickets. I've got to, right. And then if I go again, I've got to do it all over again. And so there's a lot more money that gets generated if you keep going back to the movie theater over and over. And a lot of these movies, I mean, people do go back time and time again. And so that is part of it. So there is a loss of income right. at the theatrical level when people are watching it at Disney Plus. Go ahead.
There's also a street cred kind of aspect to it, which is like, you know, for the time being anyway, Scarlett Johansson like knows how to open a movie, right? Like she gets certain box office numbers. And if they're not including what are essentially box office numbers, if I pay $20 to see that movie on opening weekend, like that's not her fault that it happened to be on a streaming device for $20.
Right.
Like that should be counted towards she opened at the box office revenue.
Right.
And that's just,
Well, especially because that's connected to a whole other different issue, but Scarlett Johansson getting to be the lead of a superhero movie was not an easy thing to accomplish. And people are going to use the amount that money that movies like that or Wonder Woman 84 make in terms of how many female superheroes we get. And again, that's my own niche of the entertainment conversation. But I think it's like, I know when people are trying to decide what they should do about going to see Black Widow or not, especially because Scarlett Johansson isn't everyone's favorite actress. That was a real question of like, I don't want to pay to go to the theater, but I want a woman superhero movie to succeed, but I don't want to support Scarlett Johansson herself. And so much levels of complexity.
Well, and you know, also the other side of this whole thing is for Wonder Woman 1984. I mean, that's another example where I'm paying my HBO subscription. I didn't have to pay any extra to watch that particular movie or Dune or,
The Matrix.
In the Heights or any of The Matrix coming out or any of these other movies that are going to be playing on HBO. So what percentage then do they get from that? Same thing with Netflix. And that's part of the issue with all of these deals that these people have is like these companies are notoriously tight-lipped about how many people are getting or actually sitting down and watching these projects. And I mean, even they're not going to know how many people actually sat. It's like the whole Nielsen thing. How many people were really in the room watching that at the time? It's that frustration. And so it's like, well, what do you pay them then? And this is what the corporate companies are saying. Well, it's like, we don't know how much it really is getting out of all of the other content that we're putting out. And that's, I mean, they're going to have to figure it out. And that's the thing. And they're going to have to start being more open with this sort of thing because, you know, these people who are getting paid these back end points are going to want that information.
Well, and I really appreciate you framing it like that because I have to say for myself, as someone who's not in the industry, and I don't in any way want to kind of put down those levels of concerns, I also look at it through another lens, which is that I don't want to have to go to a theater to watch something, and I want people to not have to. And I think that I know that was one of the things that people really were debating about Scarlett Johansson is that if there's a contract signed, people need to get paid what they got contracted for, and they can't be screwed out of it based on this. But at the same time, I think one of the fears is that when she and others win does that mean the studios are just going to say, all right, fine, we're just putting things back in the studios, nothing online, and you just have to take the risk if you're worried about COVID? Is there, like, does that mean that we just have to kind of stick with the points deals and keep everything just in the theaters? Or do you think there are ways where we might see more of a shift to releasing things online more? But in ways where the people who sign those contracts, assuming a different kind of a world, are not going to get screwed.
The thing that they had were windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the window question because you're supposed to, traditionally, there's a theatrical release and then there's the next window, which is online, and then there's the DVD
right.
window. You know, like what they're trying to do to monetize it as much as possible is for people who are like, oh, I really want to see that movie and I don't want to wait 4 weeks until it's on HBO Max. I'm going to go to the theater, right? But if it's released in HBO Max the same day, then you're not going to go to the theater. You're going to watch it right from home
right.
for free or nothing or less, right? So I think that's the question that,
right.
you know, should they still keep that window? But what they are fighting from the other side of it is that there's so much noise, not maybe for something like Black Widow. I think there's such an avid fan base that would be fine. But for a lot of movies, and maybe even that one, you know, they have a theatrical release and then 4 months later it's released again on demand. Has the public, like, did it get good word of mouth? Has the public
right.
supported, is it still in the zeitgeist? Are people now 4 months later or 3 months later excited about a totally new project and no one's going to go rent Black Widow for $19.99 or whatever,
Or just Do you have any hope of not being spoiled on every detail of it? Do you have to just like lock yourself away from Twitter and Facebook and the office water cooler so that you don't know the mystery 3 months later?
Yeah.
Because it's all going to be out there.
Which again would drive people to the box office, which I know is not great for COVID, but for their business, like that model has been successful for everybody.
Right.
So it's kind of a new, but I think maybe they're not arguing. It felt sneaky, right? I think they were like, this is sneaky because you said there was going to be a theatrical release and now there's not, and it cut into everything. And that kind of goes back to the IATSE thing, where it's like, look, if there were a lot of like really ethical, straightforward dealings going on, then maybe we wouldn't have so much trouble. But the fact is, it's a corporation that's trying to service a bottom line, and every little guy they can get, they do. So it's they have to be monitored.
100%. And we have to go back to, and I think this has come out since the settlement, just how much Disney, you know, people at Disney were saying, you know, we have to save this for theatrical. We have to save this for theatrical, not just because of Scarlett Johansson, but because the National Association of Theater Owners was all up in their face about it. Like, so many stakeholders had issues with this opening. And so, you know, I go back and forth on whether I think that those decisions were made sort of in some sort of sneaky fashion or just obtuse. Like, they just weren't ready to even understand the implications of that decision. And they were just facing extraordinary both public pressure and, frankly, Marvel pressure, because now the thing is so far out of the of the sort of canonical timeline, because the way those films are connected to one another, that they just felt like they had to get things going. So I want to give the you know, I'm not a massive supporter of corporate interests, I promise. And yet, I also know how complex these decisions can be, and how many lawyers and forms are involved. I'm sure there are forms, right? And there are probably a lot of PDFs. And those are hard to navigate, right? And so, did DocuSign?
I'm sure almost falling out of her chair laughing.
So I just know that this is a sea change, and we are witnessing it right now. And I want to at least, you know, caution a modicum of patience for fans to just let's just see. And honestly, Mandy, to you, like, how, as a director, how does this change what you advocate for in the films that you're making?
Do you mean like in terms of how we treat crew or how we would release something?
No, I mean, the release windows and you know, choices, if given choices, does this change the way you approach your films?
It would be in service of fans in terms of distribution. Like, I mean, to me, but I do, you know, I'm not doing Marvel movies at the moment.
Yet.
I mean, it's not January yet, but but like, so mine would be more like niche audiences, right? Like, and then the audience is king. So wherever they're going to watch this movie the best, in whatever way, that's where you want to distribute it. If it's like a hippy dippy movie about camping, then you're going to get in an RV and hit every campground and like do it on the boots on the ground kind of, in your, you know, face-to-face distribution model. Or you'll, you know, you find the network that has the, like, if it's a late night IFC thing, that's where you, and really, like, that's how we would do it, is we would just want to get it to the audience. Like, the fans really dictate everything. Because without people there to watch your stuff, what are you doing? You're hollering into a well.
Yeah.
Well, Mandy, I do need to warn you. Van Helsing is a Marvel comic book character, so you might come to the MCU. They're digging really deep for characters. So,
oh my gosh,
you know, that phone call might come.
Yeah.
But I think you're all really capturing so much of the complexity of this issue, and I really like both Mandy and Pete, the way you're framing this, because kind of the way I see it, at least, is, you know, contracts don't always account for the change of a situation, you know, and that, like, obviously corporate, like, the movie corporations expected to be able to keep putting movies out in theaters. That didn't happen, and they all lost their shirts because of it to some extent. But I think kind of what you're saying is that, like, if this had been an open conversation from the beginning of going to talent and going to everyone and saying, listen, we may have to release these in a totally different way, can we, with you, renegotiate our contracts in a way that also accepts that we know we're going to lose the lion's share of money here, but can we get you to work with us? Like, I know when I listened to, I didn't hear Scarlett Johansson talk about this much, but when I listened to the director and people from Wonder Woman, that was one thing they said a lot, was, look, if they had just come to us and said, you know, she was saying, like, of course, I want people to watch this movie. I don't want them to get sick. I'm okay if we can figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
But can you do it in a way that understands how much that's going to hurt me? Yeah. You know, how much, yeah. Granted, I don't think Wonder Woman 84 was a very good movie anyway, but like it looked even worse because of the way it was distributed. And that's not fair to the director, the producer, the actors, to anyone.
Yeah. And also, but I think that's also, that would be great. But, and I know you're right, Pete, they're not all sneaky. But they also
they
say...
They might be. I'm not there.
No,
they
but they're not. Yeah. You're right. Like, there are certain... They were dealing with a pandemic. They are the ones taking all the risks, spending all the money. They don't know what people are going to watch or when or how it's going to work out for them. So they're trying to deal with an unknown enigma as well. So they have... There's issues. However, they have been known to do things like... I don't know, guys, like, we don't really know how many times people are watching that show or how many people are subscribing because of it or, you know, like, they like, we don't know how many people are watching the show. That's impossible. Yeah. It's software. You have to know how many people are watching your shows. That's how could that even be a number that you don't have? That's one of the things that make you go.
Yeah.
Are they going to have an honest conversation, though?
If you're on a CBS show, everyone knows how much that's doing. But yeah, if you're on a Netflix show, they can claim they don't know, which is ludicrous.
Which is crazy. Yeah. Because actually, are you less likely to know how many people are watching a CBS show? I don't know. Like, you don't know how many sets. Maybe you do. These days, you probably do.
But also, like Andy said, like, you don't know if that set has one person in front of it or 10, you know, because it's a watch party.
Yeah, right.
So I want to be different than the studios and respect the people, the time of all of you. And I know we're coming up on our end. Is there another kind of last points, like one thing that we haven't gotten to talk about or a point or a question you want to raise for any of you?
I guess the only thing I would add, and this is counter to my let's understand the big studios position. I know we lost a lot over the pandemic, and but I have yet to see major studio executives, you know, out having literally lost their shirts. Right? They posted large losses, which is a norm in, you know, large corporate experience, but they're still there and they're fine. They're
and no
fine.
One's saying, like, I'm taking a cut in CEO pay or
yeah, exactly, like exactly. Call me when that starts to happen and I'll be a little bit more sympathetic. Like, we're all navigating these waters together. And the fact that Netflix doesn't choose to report numbers does not mean the numbers aren't there.
Yeah. Right.
It will be fine. And in the end, having a more ethical workplace environment will be better. Will be better for everyone. It'll be better for the people that work there, and I do believe it will be better for fans as well.
Yeah,
I think it will. Yeah, it's going to shift, and things will work better for all of us. And there are always, you know, there are always negotiations, and that's the thing is, like, everybody has to. There's got to be a little bit of give and take, and so is IATSE. Are they going to get every single thing that they want? You know, they're probably going to have to give on a few points. But when it comes to safety, when it comes to hours, those are the elements that they're likely going to get through. And yes, it'll probably mean budgets are going to have to be a little more so that the production companies can compensate for that. But again, these big companies, I don't think, are hurting for that. And I think if that's what it's going to be, that's what it's going to be. And in the end, I don't think that it's going to hurt them, and it will just help everybody else who's involved.
Yeah. I think it's a very good place to end it. Well, so one day the podcast union will come after me for this, but let me start again. I thank you all so much for being a part of this, and one day the podcast union is going to come after me, but right now all I can do is thank you and exposure, and we all know how valuable that is. But more seriously, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are really interested in hearing more of all what you have to say. Mandy, starting from you, if people want to learn more about what you're doing or kind of follow you in places or check out the products you're working on, where can they go?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Mandy Fab. And also, please check out our podcast, Mand Cave, that I do with Mandy Kathleen Clavins. It's a fun podcast on True Story FM.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've really been enjoying that.
Oh, good.
Pete, what about yourself?
I'm actually at True Story FM. I'm all over that. My fingerprints are all over everything over there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. True Story FM, yeah, and that's the that and the next reel is kind of where I've talked a lot about the Marvel Movie Minute podcast. Yep. You can find that. You can find the Saturday Morning Matinee, which I've mentioned a couple times. A lot of great podcasts and all sorts of great content.
Thank you.
And Andy, what about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, same thing with Pete. We're at True Story FM. We co-host the Next Reel film podcast there. You and I are doing the Marvel Movie Minute. People can go figure out which Andy Nelson I am over on IMDb, and then they can hit me up on Instagram or something if you want to get any, down and dirty details about what sort of negotiations we had to do crew-wise on any of those particular projects.
And Andy's phone number is
515-1212.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much. And to our fans, as always, I want to put these podcasts out to start a conversation. Let me know what you think. You can find me on Facebook or on Twitter at theethicalpanda.com. You can, of course, go to the website, theethicalpanda.com. And, of course, you can find more content like this at all of my other podcasts, including the Star Wars Universe podcast. And all of these podcasts are part of another great network called the Stranded Panda Podcast Network. There you can find great content on Marvel, on we're doing James Bond now. I've started to release content on the HBO show True Blood. That is a 18 and over podcast, so for younger listeners, you didn't hear anything. But there's so much great content on there. Check that out. Check out thenextreel.com. Check out all the links that we've talked about. And most importantly, have a great day.
Oh, I just want to say until next time, true believers, when I hear you.